disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with advocates Barbara Pritchard and Mary Matthews on the efforts of the Illinois Rescue and Recovery Coalition to protect people who live in nursing homes. But first, disability news for the week of September 11th, 2023. A Massachusetts facility is allowed to continue to use controversial devices to electric shock its clients after a ruling by the Supreme Judicial Court last week. The Judge Rotenberg Center, otherwise known as JRC, a day in residential school for students with special needs in Canton, Massachusetts, has become known for using electric shock devices on clients for self-injurious or aggressive behavior. It is the only facility in the country to use them and has been the center of many advocates' concerns. JRC and the Parents Association wrote in a statement, quote, "The ruling ensures that the life-saving court-approved electrical stimulation device, ESD, treatment remains available to those for whom all other treatment options have been tried and failed. However, advocates are adamant that there are other options." Nancy Weiss, who wrote a book examining the events and places, quote, "that contributed to the inability of the state of Massachusetts to stop the use of electric shock, said the painful behavioral interventions are not only inhumane, they are clearly unnecessary. Also, she said, the procedures used at the Judge Rotenberg Center fly in the face of everything the professional community now knows about the science of effective behavior modification. It is now well established that a range of behavioral approaches are available, which are not only humane, but are more effective than using severe painful punishment. Massachusetts Attorney General Andrea Joy Campbell said she was profoundly disappointed by the ruling. Quote, "I stand ready to work with the legislature and the governor to take action to end this practice. I'm also calling on the Food and Drug Administration to follow through on its announced plan to issue a new rule banning the GED skin shock device," end quote. Federal Medicaid officials say that a number of states may be improperly removing Medicaid recipients from receiving their benefits. Medicaid eligibility provides many people with disabilities access to health care and home and community-based services. In a letter to state Medicaid director from CMS, Daniel Tsai, the letter states, quote, "CMS has learned of additional systems and operational issues affecting multiple states, which may be resulting in eligible individuals being improperly disenrolled. These actions violate federal renewal requirements and must be addressed immediately," end quote. During the pandemic, states were offered additional federal funds for Medicaid as long as they did not remove most people from the program. But now the states are working to redetermine whether Medicaid beneficiaries continue to qualify for the program. So far, states have disenrolled more than 5.5 million Medicaid beneficiaries. 74% were removed for procedural reasons, like not completing required paperwork on time. It was learned that states may be sending renewal forms directed at entire households, even though certain individuals within the household should qualify for automatic renewal. In some cases, coverage has been terminated for those individuals if other members of their household did not respond. States that are out of compliance must immediately pause procedural disenrollments for everyone impacted, reinstate coverage for affected recipients, use mitigation strategies, and fix their systems and processes to meet federal requirements. Additionally, the letter from CMS says that if states don't fix the problems, they may lose their federal funding or be subjected to a corrective action plan. According to Zoe Gross, director of advocacy at the Autistic Self-Advocacy Network, quote, the CMS letter to states is an important step, but there is more that CMS needs to do. CMS should name the states that are wrongly disenrolling people from Medicaid and push them to do much more than they are currently doing to make this process fair and navigable for beneficiaries, end quote. And finally, people with disabilities often lose government benefits if they get married. In response, advocates are staging a mass commitment ceremony on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. This event, which happens on Wednesday, is expected to bring people dressed in wedding attire to Washington, where a commitment ceremony complete with cutting a wedding cake and a reception will happen. Activists will also speak at the gathering about the issues faced by people with disabilities who wish to marry. Organizers within the Disability Rights Education and Defense Fund say they're hoping to have over 100 couples participate, but no one will be legally married at the event, which is meant only as a performance. Allies are encouraged to attend as well. As a result of current laws, Supplemental Security Income benefits drop by 25% when beneficiaries wed, and marriage can influence a person's ability to even retain their Medicaid coverage. Some members of Congress have proposed bills to change the rules to allow recipients to marry without compromising their income, health care, or other supports. According to Aisha Elaine Lewis, staff attorney for the Disability Rights Education and Defense Fund, this organization has long been working to protect the freedom of people with disabilities to marry and form families with those they love. While different legislation has been introduced in the past to make sure people don't lose the disability benefits they rely on, we've needed more attention on the issue. The performance and of the performance art mass commitment ceremony is a way we hope to gain that attention, end quote. And that's the news for this week.
Chapel, and we're gonna get married. Going to the chapel, and we're gonna get married. We really love you, and we're gonna get married. Going to the chapel of love. And
you are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is Disability Beat. I'm Vicki Nicewander, and I'm joined today by two guests on the phone. I'm very fortunate to have on the line Barbara Pritchard, who is a longtime local advocate here in Champaign-Urbana, and Mary Matthews, also an advocate, and both of them are working with an organization called the Illinois Rescue and Recovery Coalition, which is intended to protect people who live in nursing homes. So welcome to the program, ladies. I appreciate you being on the line.
Thank you so much for having us.
Barb, why don't you introduce yourself first, and then we'll go to Mary, okay?
Okay. Well, my name is Barb Pritchard. I am a longtime Urbana resident, and I've known Vicki for quite a number of years. And I've gotten involved in the organization Institutional Rescue and Recovery, and been working with Mary and other folks to improve life for people in nursing homes and help to get them out of nursing homes.
All right. Well, it's certainly, yes, we have known each other for a very long time, and I've just met Mary recently on the phone. So, Mary, why don't you introduce yourself a little bit as well?
Hi, my name is Mary Matthews. I actually became involved with the Institutional Rescue and Recovery Coalition while I spent 2 years in a nursing home. I joined the organization through their resident group. It's a group of residents and ex-residents that meets weekly. And that's where I started. And then I started going to the full coalition meetings, the full member meetings. And then I ended up on the steering committee. So
Yeah, and Mary, your experience, I think, is really exemplary for people who need the support of an organization like the Institutional Rescue and Recovery Coalition. How did you end up? You were living in a nursing home for a couple of years, correct?
Yes.
How did that happen? What were your life circumstances that you needed to make that move?
Actually, I've had depression my whole life, pretty much. I mean, I know it goes back to like high school at least, but I was actually lost a job, and it was a company that went bankrupt, so there was a lot of people on the market, and I literally went into a really deep depression from that,
mm-hmm.
and because I was struggling so much to get a job. Through that, I ended up unable to pay my bills. After about 2 years, I ended up unable to pay my bills, that kind of thing. And my house went into foreclosure. So I was evicted from the house. And when the eviction team come in, there's a social worker with them, who knew. And he asked me where I planned to go, and I said, I'm homeless. And I'm a type 1 diabetic, so being homeless on an insulin pump is really tough because you can't get your supplies for your insulin pump without mm-hmm. having an address because it's mailed to you. So he actually is the one that got me into the nursing home. So keep in mind, I went into a nursing home. Unlike most people, I was excited. I was like, wow, I've got running water. I've got electricity. Those are things I didn't have at that point in the house I was living in. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was January in Chicago, and yeah, I was basically living without any of that. So I had a roof over my head, but that was about it.
Yeah, so it didn't turn out to be quite as peachy as you originally thought then, right?
Yeah, it didn't take long before that turned around completely. The first shock for me was when you go into a nursing home, the nursing home facility has such complete control over your life. I mean, they make the tiniest little decisions are just taken away from you. I was shocked and appalled. In the beginning, I was kind of like, hey, this doesn't seem right, but I didn't know what to do. Our ombudsman actually came. Ombudsman is a group that's from the state that actually advocate for residents in nursing homes, and they have they're really good. At least the one we had was phenomenal. But she actually is the one that gave me the information about institutional rescue and recovery, and that's how I ended up, with that group. But the big thing was it was the lack of control over anything. I mean, they made decisions about when I got my meds. They made decisions about whether or not I saw doctors, much less when I saw them. They made decisions like, I'm a natural night owl, so I usually stay up pretty late, but they actually wouldn't let residents into the what are called the day rooms after a certain time at night, not for any reason. There's no one in there. No one's using them, just because they didn't want to do it. And so you couldn't go in there, so I have to lay in my bed because I'm in a room with three other people. I can't turn on my television, anything like that that'll disturb them trying to sleep. Even my light is going to disturb them trying to sleep. So those types of just little things that take away any power you have to live your own life was frightening.
Well, and you're able to articulate all of that. I'm wondering about the people who live in nursing homes who aren't able to articulate those issues. What is the solution to this kind of a problem?
The biggest thing is changing the way nursing homes are run. I mean, I know that sounds pretty huge, but we've got to make some kind of changes because with that power that the facilities have, there's a real danger, and all too often, and I now facilitate the IRC and Institutional Rescue and Recovery Coalition resident meeting. Mm-hmm. So I hear from residents all over the state every week. And I talk to them. And it's really very common for abuse and retaliation to happen because a resident speaks up for their rights. The state of Illinois has a list of residents' rights, and they're regularly and commonly broken. But if you speak up and say, you know, I really want this, that, or the other thing, I'm supposed to be able to do this. I mean, a little one is you're supposed to be able to make your calls in private, have a private place you can make calls and receive calls. Doesn't exist in any nursing home I've been able to find yet. And keep in mind, I've talked to people from all over the state.
Wow.
None of them have it.
Wow.
And then there's bigger things like, you know, if they're giving you they sometimes screw up on things like medication, and not all of the staff will even listen to you when you tell them that's not mine. And then they report you for not having taken your meds. I mean, there are things like that that just, you have no real say, and it's a horrible way to live. As far as changing that, you need to have people involved in nursing homes that don't abuse that power. The state has the ombudsman program, and they also have the Illinois Department of Public Health, IDPH, and that's where problems are reported. There's actually a nursing home hotline that you can call and report something that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, they're looking at changes in, they're looking for things that are against the law, really, whereas not just dealing with, is this person's life being respected and recognized? And, you know, it's a very different line, whereas the ombudsman program is really dealing with, you know, this person deserves to be respected. This is their home. So they should be treated like they're in their home. And those two groups sometimes aren't able to do enough. The facilities have such a strong political connection. They've got lobbyists that are very powerful. And so they actually have this support that is frightening. I mean, I reported a couple of problems while I was in there to the state, and they came in, and it was like, they asked the staff what happened, which is one story, and then they'd ask me, but I was less than. Because I'm a nursing home resident, I didn't have that same level of believability, which I find, again, offensive. But, and for, as you said, I'm pretty able to talk, obviously. And for people that have more of a mental disability and those types of things, it's nearly impossible. They just aren't heard.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the IRRC actually created a video with people's voices on it. And obviously over the radio, we're not going to be able to hear, or we're not going to be able to see the video, but we certainly can hear the words of these folks. Barb, you want to say a couple of words about why this video was made and how you're using it?
We wanted to have people tell their story in little snippets. And we want to use their stories to make the public and the legislators aware of what's happening so we can introduce some legislation to make some changes. And we're collecting more stories.
Okay, so you're going to add to the video.
We have about 6 or 8 of them.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and listen to this, and then I'll have you talk a little bit more after.
Okay.
100,000 Illinoisans live at unacceptable risk of abuse in nursing homes.
When I went into the facility, I had no idea that much control was going to be exerted over my own person. That temporary stay for wound care turned into 7 years of fighting for my rights and fighting for my independence.
All the control of my life, of my basic life decisions, were taken from me.
Whether or not I got to see my doctor, whether or not I got to see my psychiatrist, whether or not I got to go outside.
And that's when I started to read about my rights as a resident, and they violated everything within that pamphlet.
And I pushed back on it.
I was trying to advocate for certain rules to be changed. They weren't very happy about that.
We could get shots administered to us if we were acting out, quote unquote, by asking for what we needed.
After expressing the violation and the abuse, instead of fixing the problem, which could be easy, they punished me by sending me to the psych hospital.
I got dropped by a CNA and I fractured my right femur. The Department of Public Health didn't really do anything with the complaint I gave them.
I've told my kids that do what you have to do, but don't ever send me back.
Humanize long-term care. Pass HB 3716.
Please pass this bill because no one should live in fear of retribution from someone that's supposed to be taking care of them.
HB 3716 gives nursing home residents stronger protections against abuse. Contact your state legislator, or for more information, go to irrcoalition.org/humanize. Paid for by the Institutional Rescue and Recovery Coalition.
All I can say is, wow, that is very powerful. And it reminds me of all the time that we've spent talking on this program about institutions for people with developmental disabilities separate from nursing homes. But the idea of the abuse and retaliation is certainly prevalent in both, is it not?
Very much so, very much so. And that's kind of what drew me into the Institutional Rescue and Recovery Coalition, because I see people being denied their rights and being denied in nursing homes, at least. It's so hard to get out of them once you get in them. And we wanted to introduce a bill, actually two bills, to make some changes. And I believe we wanted to highlight one of those bills today.
Yeah, just for those who are listening, this is going to be a two-part discussion. You guys are going to be back on the program next Monday. This is a huge issue that not many people are aware of, and I am at fault for not spending enough time talking about this either, because we're so hung up on issues for people with developmental disabilities and so forth. But there are, how many people are there who live in nursing homes in the state of Illinois? Do we have any idea?
I'm not sure I've read that number. Mary, do you have a... We can find out and let you know, but I don't know.
Well, I know.
Do you have a better idea?
There are a little, almost 1,700 people with developmental disabilities who live in state-operated developmental centers. My inclination is to think that that is just a small number compared to the folks who live in nursing homes.
And I can just say,
I would totally agree.
I think the number is around 70,000, but I'll validate what the number is and bring it back next week if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely fine. So tell us what this bill, the one that's addressing the abuse and retaliation in nursing homes, what the intent of that would be.
We want that bill to allow residents to have the right to sue the nursing home if they're retaliated against. Right now, the nursing home industry is pushing back on us for that, but people don't have the right to sue, or it's very costly. So we're trying to work with lawyers that would take it on with no fee and work with people so that they can have their rights respected. And then the other part of the legislation would be to form a task force with all different types of people involved in long-term care, obviously residents, disability advocates, people from the state government, people from nursing home associations, to kind of think outside the box and put nursing home long-term care, spin it on its head, and think about for a year, how do we want to change it so that people have the right to move out, and also so that we cut the pipeline, essentially, that now goes from hospitals straight to nursing homes, because people have the right to a nursing home, straight out of a hospital. They don't always have the right to get in-home care. And so we really want to change that thinking and get people to think about using, and doctors to use in-home care first, but we also need to bolster the services provided for in-home care so that we have enough people doing the jobs and making it so that somebody can have a PA within a day, or a personal assistant or personal care assistant within a day of getting out of the nursing home. Because if you can't, then you don't have in-home supports, and then you run the risk of falling or hurting yourself and, then being sent to the nursing home.
So if you are a person living in a nursing home and you are experiencing this abuse, or even if you're a family member and you suspect that there may be abuse happening for your loved one that lives in a nursing home, what are the steps that you would need to take to make that happen if this bill passes?
You mean to get the bill? Go ahead, Mary.
No, go ahead, Barb. You got it. I thought you were hesitating.
To get the bill passed or to...
No. Well, obviously, we're going to talk about getting the bill passed and all that, but what your solution for this is, are people going to have a place to call? Do they call the ombudsman, who calls an attorney who's going to give them services pro bono? How does that happen? Or are those details still have to be figured out yet?
We have to work out all the details and work on getting the law or the legislation introduced, but that's our hope, is that people would be able to get to a lawyer to bring a lawsuit. In the meantime, what people can do is we're collecting stories of abuse, neglect, nursing home experiences, and that's being done with University of Illinois Chicago. Mm-hmm. And you can contact IRC to get your name on the list of people to be interviewed. And they're going to do that very carefully. They don't want to interview somebody in the nursing home necessarily, or while they're in the nursing home, because residents don't want to be overheard. But we want to get more faces and voices. You heard the voices on the video. We want to expand that to show more of what's happening in nursing homes.
And what is that bill number? Your email address for that, if people want to email or contact.
Manager, I believe it's, go ahead, Mary.
It's manager@irrcoalition.org.
Okay, I will be sure and put that on our Facebook page. And then if people want to advocate to their representative, their senator, to pass this bill, what is the bill number?
That may change right now, but if people want to get involved and get more information from us, we have a monthly meeting
of duties that people can be involved in.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the previous number, Mary?
Is 3716.
We are out of time, but we're going to continue this conversation next week, ladies.